My name is Emily White, and this is a session on getting the most out of your dreams. Specifically today, psychological types according to Carl Gustav Jung. I'm going to base much of it on the book by Dr. Marianne Mattoon, Applied Dream Analysis, a Jungian Approach. It is not available here, but it is available for those of you who come from Minneapolis. It's available at St. Martin's Table and other bookstores. But it is very technical, but it is, I'll explain it to you so that I think you'll be able to assimilate it. We'll also do an exercise in understanding where we come from, as the young people say. Carl Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist, a disciple of Freud, who broke with him over some technical interpretations of the dream. There is a book I'm reading right now, The Struggle Between Freud and Jung, and it is apparent that Jung was, that Freud was unwilling to give Jung some biographical data about his dream and said this would imperil my authority. And so Jung said, but you tell your patients to give us biographical material. But Jung said, I can't do it. And so over that they began to drift apart, and Jung being younger and more interested in mythology, alchemy, the occult, moved quite a long ways beyond Freud, and his great contribution is to show that in the unconscious there is more than just sex and the death instinct. He's coming into his own, and he is a Christian, a Protestant son of a long line of Protestant ministers, and a real Swiss. His works, he wrote 18 collected works, are written in very difficult German, but most of them have now been translated and are available in small volumes. His other very famous book is Memories, Dreams, and Reflections, which is an autobiography based on his inner life, his memories, dreams, and reflections. And for all of us who are entering the second half of life, this inner journey is the most important journey that we can undertake. And one of the reasons I'm teaching here and next week at Elder Hostel is to emphasize the fact that we must look inward and explore the inner recesses of the psyche and embark on this very exciting inner journey by keeping a dream journal. Getting ahead of myself here. Welcome for those who are just coming in. Today I will not talk so much about dreams as about Jung's view of the psyche, and particularly of the extroversion, introversion. How many of you have heard of those terms? Just about everybody. And there is a lot of misconception about extroverts being, you know, happy-go-lucky and slap on the back. Not necessarily. A mechanic can be an extrovert. Anyone who deals with the object is more extroverted than the introvert who looks inward. I'll read you the exact definitions here. I'm reading from the book from Marianne Mattoon. The most widely accepted and validated of Jung's theories probably is that of the attitude type, extroversion and introversion. Please note it's extraversion and introversion. Jung designated these categories as personality dimensions, especially recognizing that everyone has some of each. We are more introverted than extroverted, more extroverted than introverted, but nobody is a pure type. And yesterday, Janet Grant talked about the Myers-Briggs indicator, and that is a way of finding out what your type or your extroversion, introversion tendency is. by and large, young people are extroverted, more extroverted than introverted, because they have to make these adjustments in life, they have to make decisions, they have to have a job, etc. In the second half of life, by and large, people are more introverted. So it's, think of a gyroscope that goes, you know, leans back and forth and moves. In fact, the gyroscope image is really good to keep in mind, because as you go into different situations, for instance, right now I am in an extroverted mode. I'm speaking to you, but my tendency is to be introverted. I keep journals and I analyze and so forth. Another touchstone is that the extrovert can usually go from one event to another event to another event, goes to his cabin or lodge to change his clothes and comes right out again to do another thing and another thing and another thing. The introvert can do many things, but then has to spend as much time assimilating it in his or her room, or have solitude. And in general, it is good to balance solitude with activity. But if you look at your balance of activity and what gives you your highs, you can tell which way you're leaning. And later we're going to ask you to group yourselves in introverts and extroverts and talk to each other and see if you agree, and then move to another group. In fact, we could almost do that right now. But first, some questions, if you have any. How many of you think you're extroverts? Okay, only three or four? Well, four. Would you like to come over here and talk to each other for about 2 or 3 minutes? Can you come down too?
Group for undecided.
Yeah, then we're going to have a group. Just a minute. Then we want those who are definitely introverts. Would you like to move in this area and talk to each other? And then the ones in between who can't decide, I will talk to you and help you decide. How's that? Okay, how about the introverts over there, and then I'll...
Is it possible to be both an extrovert and an introvert?
That's what I'm saying. We're talking about whether you lean more to one side or the other. Think of it as a...
Well, to me, it depends on who I'm
with. I know, that's part of it, but come into the undecided group. Which looks like it's... Well, most of you are undecided, looks like. All right. If the introverts would like to make a little circle, we'll talk for a few minutes. Just discuss what you think it means to be really introverted. My goodness. So the most of you can't decide. All right. How do you feel about spending time alone?
I love it.
You love it. You love it.
Well, I love it. I want to honor that feeling I have, but then it seems like a husband or a child or somebody needs me to lean, so I give up on it.
Ah, well, then you're an introvert.
If you have the urge,
give up your solitude
honor.
To meet the needs, then you're an introvert. How about, is anybody here who feels alone and lonely when they're alone and seeks to go out? Seeks to go out and you can be more extroverted. If when you're in your room alone, you can hardly wait to go out to serve, to do, etc. Whereas in her case, she's alone and she likes it, but somebody needs her and she's pulled away. Do you see the difference? Well, can any of you make a decision? Yeah, you what?
I say I like to be alone and I like to.
Yes. But how many of you keep journals? Yeah, well then that puts you right in that category. Okay. Let's see, how else? How about you?
Well, I like to be alone for a certain amount of time and then I get lonely and
I
just go out.
Right, you go over here probably, yeah. Also because you're
well,
younger.
Well, the Myers-Briggs came out that I was a little bit extroverted.
A little bit, that's what I thought, yeah. None of us are totally so. Well, okay. They're already into the types, into the functions here. as we grow older, I think we become more set in our ways. And I think it is more likely that we'll be more comfortable with ourselves. Another touchstone is how you make transitions. Does it take you a long time to move from one thing? Of course, as you get older, everything seems to take longer. But taking a long time to move from one thing to another is another touchstone. Well, maybe you all want to talk to each other for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll all come back together, okay? Opposites, extroverts and introverts, often attract each other and get married, and they are fascinated by the fact that one loves to do this and the other one loves to do this, and it forms a wonderful give and take. But if when conflict occurs and one spouse wants to go to 1, 2, or 3 parties and the other one wants to stay home and read, that can begin to form a rift. And if they don't work it out by talking about it and compromising, eventually some couples end up with one living his mode and the other one living her mode, and they live separate and equal ways. It's something that is a challenge to work out when you are married to the opposite type. And it is exciting because each one can give to the other what the other one doesn't naturally seek. So if you are in that situation, keep talking. In fact, always keep talking. Now, in addition to the extroversion, introversion, Jung talks about 4 functions. I've drawn a little diagram here and abbreviated. Thinking and feeling, as you see, are opposites. And intuition and sensate are opposites. I'll give you the definition. The functions distinguish people because each person has some functions more developed than others. Sensate or sense perception tells you what is, what exists. It also is a practical aspect of your psyche. It tells you what is. Thinking gives you the logical dimension. It tells you how to think about life. Philosophers are thinking types. We all think, but a thinking type approaches everything rationally and has to think it through. And if he has thinking and sensate together, he will think step by step by step and be very practical. The third function is feeling, which tells you whether it is agreeable or not, pleasant or unpleasant. It's not the emotion. It has the aspect of good or bad. If you ask a thinking type, he will about a situation, he'll usually say right or wrong. The feeling type will say good or bad. You can just begin to listen to that. People tend to come out with that. Somebody say, how are you? I'm good or bad. Or how's the situation? Right or wrong, good or bad. It often is a way to differentiate between thinking and feeling. And finally, intuition, which is my favorite, is the one that tells you where something comes from and where it is going. It is that quality that lets you see possibilities over and beyond what is. The possibilities over and beyond, like you're here and you can imagine what your life will be 5 years, you like to speculate. You often stumble over your own feet because you don't really look at the ground. You're already ahead of yourself. And intuition is a good quality for a therapist to have because, as I said once before, you listen with what we call the third ear, and you have a hunch, and you have to both feel yourself into the client, patient, and have a open mind to see possibilities. So if you are a thinking type, as I drew over here, you're feeling, and all this is Jungian theory, and I have tested it and thought about it for about 30 years, and it does seem to hold up. If you're basically a thinking type, you'll have some, well, let's say, your inferior function would be in feeling. It would be that which trips you up, your feelings. You would tend to worry, tend to feel more uneasy. It's hard to explain until you've worked with it yourself, but just remember, thinking and feeling are opposites. If your main function were intuition, then sensate would be your weaker function or the inferior function. And as in my case, I am not practical. I have wonderful hunches. I'm intuitive and feeling, and I can see possibilities, but when it comes to the practical step by step, I still have a little difficulty. However, in the second half of life, your task is to work on your inferior function. And one of the marvelous things that's happened to me is that, impractical as I am, I volunteered St. Martin's Table as the cashier, and I have the reputation of being the most accurate, which is amazing. So that's helped me bring that up. Let's see. Now, in dreams, that's rather interesting, dreams tend to compensate, and in dreams you may often dream of the opposite type of yourself. This gets a little complicated, but when you begin to interpret dreams, and I'll talk about that Thursday, I believe, or Friday, you can see the figures that are opposite to you. Some are your shadow figures, and some are your inferior functions, and some are your ideals, which would be like your superior functions. A way to recognize what your strength is to actually look and see what trips you up. What is it that gives you trouble? Is it your feelings? Is it thoughts, recurring thoughts and worries? Is it the practical details? Or do you get upset by, what's this hard for me to do? If you had sensate, as if you were sensate, practical person, what would trip you up? Too many possibilities, I suppose. Are you still with me? Okay. All right, I'll ask again for a show of hands, but just offhand now. Who thinks they're a thinking type? Okay. And who thinks they are an intuitive type? Okay. And who would say they're a feeling type? Uh-huh. And that leaves sensate. Anybody here who feels they're sensate? All right. This is a bit of a minority. That is very interesting. I think you can keep thinking about that. It distributes almost fairly evenly in the population. Here we have a very predominance of introverted thinking, feeling types, but in the population as a whole it distributes, and it's one of God's graces that we all have different gifts, different strengths, so that we can complement each other. Yes?
Are the thinking sensate,
yeah,
are they more parallel? They tend to accompany each other more. And well, the intuitive feeling?
Yeah.
That's my...
Yes, you can have any combination. You're asking if thinking and sensate...
Do they tend to be more parallel with each other?
Okay. In a sense, but you mean by parallel, they go together. You usually have two strengths, thinking sensate or thinking intuition. You don't... Thinking feeling are the opposite. You see? But thinking sensate or thinking intuition go together. And Jung was a thinking intuitive, therefore he had this marvelous ability to see possibilities as well as to think logically. Many theorists are thinking intuitives. They do go in pairs. so that they complement each other. And the thinking sensei person is both logical and practical. So that's a pretty good combination. See, intuitive feeling, I have to turn that around so that you can see what I'm talking about. It's my way of doing it to show if intuition and sensate is this way, then thinking and feeling, then you could have a pair of intuition and feeling or intuition and thinking, and they're a little bit more non-logical, shall I say. Not irrational, but not logical. And they will be able to see comparisons and analogies. Poets, in general, are intuitives. They can see most unlikely analogies and metaphors that most of us who are logical don't perceive. And that's what I think is so beautiful, is that we all have different gifts that we bring to each other and to the world in which we live to enrich each other. And so I don't make a value judgment. Jung does not make a value judgment. Our culture makes somewhat of a value judgment that thinking and practicality is valued more than intuition, and certainly more than mysticism and dream analysis. Any questions? Okay. Now, talking about value judgments, we tend to make value judgments all the time. And a dyed-in-the-wool introvert will think of the extrovert as superficial. Does that click with anybody? And the extrovert, in turn, will think that the introvert is maybe too serious, mulling things over too much, taking too much time, too slow. Of course, again, there's the age factor, but we will try to be general here. Again, Jung's concept of the opposites holds in this case, and you can think of yourself as walking on a tightrope with, if you imagine this is your superior function, those are your auxiliary functions. And as you go along, you balance yourself with these, as you go along, you use all your functions, and also, like we said earlier, you're extroverted or introverted. It gets complicated. But your feet represent the inferior function. And so you have to walk very carefully, kind of. I've found that the image here of using the arms as a steadying thing, as though you were walking on a tightrope, explains why sometimes you can be, let's say, logical and intuitive, and sometimes you can be logical and practical, or sometimes you can be intuitive and feeling, and sometimes intuitive and thinking. And you said it depends who you're with. Somebody said that right here. And different people pull different aspects of yourself. And it is in friendship that usually you are similar in both function and type. Both function and type, above our dimension, extroversion, introversion. Friends tend to be very much alike. They're on the same wavelength, the way Nancy was talking. But spouses, marriage partners, often are opposites, either in dimension or in function. And it is extremely helpful to know what function is your partner's strength, because some of the marital difficulties revolve precisely about differences in function. Anybody nodding to this?
Yes.
And just this is where I've been able in my practice to clarify and help several people, because the conflict had become a rift, and until they became aware of why there was such a difference, that, and they were making value judgments, you see. So you can't make value judgments, but you accept the other person, and then you compliment each other instead of criticizing them for jumping ahead when you're step by step, or not showing your feelings when this person is a thinking type, you see. That's the most frequent difficulty. The thinking type who has trouble really getting in touch with feelings, expressing their feelings, and the other spouse may be all feeling, making everybody feel good, but really can't think logically too well, and there can be tremendous conflict, and yet they can complement each other beautifully and enrich each other. Yes.
Have we made that more difficult by constantly talking about women are more feeling and men are more thinking? Yeah. Is that?
I would like to immediately say that there's no gender association. Women are not more feeling and men more thinking, but in our culture we have typed them this way, just as, you know, men are still regarded as the first breadwinner and the woman the second breadwinner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's changed yet, but...
No.
No? So, again, I'd like to underline that and on the tape to say that in no way are men more thinking and women more feeling. But because that women are in a nurturing role, you see, you can be a nurturer and be a thinking type as a woman. You see, and you still can be a good mother and nurture. But you might not enjoy giving a party and making people feel at home. You might be the kind of woman who sits and talks with the men about big ideas. You see? On the other hand, if you're a nurturer, a woman, a mother who is a feeling type, she would like to make everybody feel comfortable. She would love, let's say, interior decorating, creating the atmosphere of the home and enjoying doing that. And then at the party, for example, she would be talking probably with the other women about the same things. This is just an example, but what do you think a typist, I hear the typist next door, has to be to enjoy the work? Again, if you're doing work that is aligned with your strength and your superior function, you will enjoy it. And there is this book, the title just came out, Do What You Like and the Money Will Follow. And part of the thesis, though it's not framed in Jungian terms, is do what is what gives you pleasure, what is natural to you. Use your gifts in whatever you do as much as possible, and the money will follow. You will get enjoyment and you will get your rewards monetarily. Similarly, when you do a job that is not your natural inclination, gets to be like a straitjacket. That's another touchstone to know whether you're working from your superior function or whether you're forcing yourself into a different mode. Sometimes there are necessities, and I'm not saying that we can all do everything we like, but the people who are happiest are the ones who find a remunerative job that fits their superior function, their best gift. And when we volunteer, we sometimes end up doing that which we enjoy the most. One other of my volunteer jobs is to be a volunteer usher, and I get at Orchestra Hall, I get to listen to all the concerts. That's really one of the great joys. Any questions? Well, you must all be understanding this very well. Yeah?
You said earlier that you've been at different times in your life or whatever, one time the introverted and then the extroverted. Does the same go for these other functions? I mean, you can at times be more a feeler mm-hmm. than a thinker, uh-huh. and other times more a thinker than a feeler.
Yeah. You're asking whether you get whether the functions can be interchanged the way extroversion introversion keeps can be either or. Not as much. You were born with a predisposition for these functions, And I think that's what we mean by personality. You know that a newborn baby, pretty soon, your children, you can tell the kind of things they like to do. There are differences. And they become more pronounced. And you can bring up your inferior function, but you cannot really interchange it. Your inferior function will never be your superior thing. Here's an example. I may be very good at the cash register, but I only do it for an hour and a half. I couldn't possibly do it for 8 hours. I also do it as a volunteer, and because I like the people, you see? So if I have to do an exact task, for example, in the kitchen, measuring ingredients is almost impossible for me, or knitting by a pattern. I can knit, but I knit intuitively, you see? Incidentally, in our Jung Association in Minneapolis, we started a little project of writing recipes by functions, and it was kind of fun. We had a person measuring out exactly and giving exact instructions, and we had the person who felt like making hamburger today, and we had the person the intuitive came to the, opened the refrigerator and said, well, let's see, what are the possibilities here? Something there. Let's throw it all together. And we wrote the recipe for the same lasagna, I think it was, from the different points of view. It was really funny. So.
Could you say that a computer programmer would be more of a thinking?
Yeah, thinking and sensate. Has to be very accurate. And I think the computer is a challenge because it can do many things that we can't do so much faster. I don't know anything about computers, as you can guess. I will have to buy a word processor because I do want to write, and I understand that you can do wonderful things, moving things around. So my excitement about a computer is not the accurate things that you could do, but how you can move around the paragraphs, you see. And the story. Any other questions? Comments?
What about a perfectionist?
What about a perfectionist? That is now going to an extreme of the type. Every type can be carried to the extreme and even go over into a neurotic thing, which perfectionism is not necessarily neurotic, but if it is carried to the ultimate extreme where everything has to be absolutely perfect and you can't rest until it is, that takes up so much energy that we feel we would tell that person, do let go a little bit. It is an extreme of a logical thinking function carried to the ultimate extreme. The extreme, let's say, of a feeling type would be the overly emotional person, even though I said it's not necessarily emotion, but if you can't relax unless you feel just right, I mean, so you're really in touch with your feeling, carried to the extreme again can become an impediment. And most extremes become impediments to living. I think the old golden rule, the middle road, is really the best. Also balance. It's very important to balance your life and not to overdo one side or the other, whether it is extroversion, introversion, or whether it is all the time doing everything thinking, or all the time being just intuitive, or only feeling, and so forth. That's why we have all these possibilities. If you listen to me, you'll see why I'm an intuitive. I'm always talking about possibilities. Come up to Holden, and before you know it, think, well, what other things could we do at Holden?
And I was wondering what the difference, I've always wondered this, and I really don't have a clue.
Yes.
What the difference is between logical,
yeah,
and common sense.
You're asking what is the difference between logic and common
logical
sense. Logical people, common sense. Well, does anybody want to try and answer here?
I would think that logic would be more, you could be thinking abstractly. You could think of like numbers, things like that, whereas it seems common sense is more like piling your big dishes under your small dishes.
All right, yeah, you say that the logic would be more abstract thinking and common sense would be more, I call it earthy, down to earth, so practical. Concrete. Really, yes?
Common sense is empirical.
Empirical.
It's in remembering this makes sense.
Yes.
Where logic is a form of mathematics.
Very good. Logic is a form of mathematics or abstract thinking. That is also typical of a thinking type, that they will enjoy abstract thought, enjoy mathematics, enjoy physics. Your choice in college would tell you a lot about what you like, or what your functions are, your superior function. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
There are many ramifications here, because now when we think about dreams, remember I talked about dreams as being a mirror that shows you what's in the unconscious, and the unconscious compensates for your conscious mind. And it's, again, a balance. If you are overextended in your waking life, your dream may tell you, slow down, take time. If you're over extroverted, overextended, let's say, spend time alone, go in a cave or whatever, you know. So that's very interesting. Over time, you could see how the dreams reflect and balance and compensate for the conscious situation. And I think tomorrow or next day, I will be taking a dream and analyzing it step by step. Any other questions? When I teach Elder Hostel next week, I will be doing this, and then I will be giving them probably the Myers-Briggs test, which gives you a rough estimate. You said you took it?
Yeah.
Yes. And how long did it take you to take the test?
Well, I don't know where it comes under, but it takes me a long time to make up my mind.
Oh, I see.
So it took me about an hour.
It did.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I mulled over those questions.
Uh-huh. The thing about taking, that's maybe why you came right out in the middle. If you take a long time on this test, you may hear about it when you go out. Myers-Briggs, it's used in vocational counseling quite a bit. You're supposed to give your snap judgments. And of course, if you mull about it, think about it, you will decide that sometimes you do this and sometimes you do that. We're not all of one piece. This is just what I was saying to you. That only extreme types, extreme people, try always to be on the same line. It's a dynamic thing. We tend to use different functions. And in the Myers-Briggs, it's important to make up your mind fairly quickly. But if you finally finished it and so forth, as I said, I will use it for the Elder Hostel next week. And then we will talk in groups about how they came out.
I learned a lot from it, just by talking.
Well, can you share? You said you learned a lot. What things did you learn?
Well, I guess by the questions. I mean, by looking at the questions and trying to figure out what would I do in that situation. See, a lot of myself is that I don't know what I want to do. Do I want to stay in my room and be alone, or do I want to go out? I can't.
Uh-huh.
I really don't know a lot of the time which I'm more comfortable doing. But because the questions are phrased differently, one of them I would just be, I just don't know what the answer would be. Then there'd be a little variation of it, and I would be able to answer that directly.
Yes. On the Myers-Briggs, many questions are repeated, and sometimes it's not easy to decide whether you want to stay in your room or go out, or what the choices are, and then it's phrased just a little more differently, and then it's more easy to decide. Here at Holden, we have this freedom, and it's a great opportunity for you to find out what you really lean towards. There's also the aspect of wanting to be taught versus doing. Like in the last 2 hours, some of you were out there painting, maybe for the first time, expressing yourself. There's another balance between taking in and doing. And it seems to me that at Holden we can sometimes overdo the taking in. Sometimes by evening we're overwhelmed by how much we've taken in. And then we need to move away and walk, weave, paint, meditate, you know, to balance the day. But because we don't have the cares and the demands of the outside world, it's a real opportunity to find out what you most enjoy, which way you lean, and what gives you the greatest satisfaction. Any more questions? Well, we're all a little tired today. It's been a beautiful day. And it's a great day for hiking. Yes?
I don't know if this is appropriate, but I'll ask it anyway.
That's all right.
I took the Myers-Briggs some years ago, mm-hmm. and came out as an ESFJ.
Okay. ES, let's, oh yeah, there's
what
that
I'd like
one.
To ask is, what does that all mean? Part of the problem that I have with that is that the terms that often are used, or that are used, extrovert, introvert, and so forth, seem to have different meanings than what normal people define them. You define extrovert and introvert earlier as being different than what you normally think about.
That's
that.
How I prefaced it.
Yes. It seems that's also the case with the functions.
Right.
And you haven't talked about the judging procedure.
I didn't want to complicate it too much, but since you brought it up, this gentleman tells me they took the Myers-Briggs, this is for the tape, took the Myers-Briggs test and came out ESFJ. E for extroversion, S for sensate, F for feeling, and J for judgmental. There is another dimension on the Myers-Briggs that is judgmental versus perceptive. Personally, I haven't worked with the Myers-Briggs, so I really don't know too much about it, except that that's another label. I only work with the first three. So the E stands for extroversion, the sensate for sensate, what is practical, feeling. So that is a very good combination. What would be your opposite then? What would be in your, if S is your strength, intuition would be your inferior function, which means that seeing possibilities, having hunches, is not your strength. Does that fit?
Not totally. When I think of intuiting, I often use the phrase going by my nose, what my nose is telling me,
uh-huh.
or operating by the seat of my pants.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's saying that he defines intuition as going by the seat of your pants or by what his nose tells him. That's a very, very good definition. But in your usual, habitual way of dealing, wouldn't you say that you are practical and down to earth and all that, and
like
realistic, but also feeling, which is, you see there's a gentleman here whose second strength is feeling, so this belies the fact that women all are the feeling types. Any other questions? Did you just come in?
We just came in.
Oh.
Excuse us.
That's fine. That's all right. It's just that you may listen to the tape. This is being taped. So to get the introduction. We have about 10 more minutes here.
I was just going to say, you asked what I learned from the Myers-Briggs, and I've done a lot of attended adult children of alcoholic meetings for a long time, dysfunctional families, and I think it's interesting because if I look at how my siblings dealt with alcoholism in the family, they dealt with it very differently from how I did. Mm-hmm. And this has really explained why, because I'm more of a feeling person. Well, my Myers-Briggs came out E, feeling, intuitive, and perceiving, and I seem to
but
be...
Just a minute. How did you come out?
Very slightly E, and then
feeling,
feeling, intuitive, perceiving.
Okay.
And it explains a lot to me why I react, how I have developed or as compared to my siblings.
Yes,
because
you were saying that, that
I was born with
A feeling function that was your superior function. You're saying that you could see the difference in how you and your siblings reacted to the dysfunctional family
mm-hmm.
situation. And would you say then that made it easier or more difficult for you to deal with it? Or
it's easier. It's now I understand why
uh-huh.
my siblings look at me and they say, what's wrong with you?
The siblings say that what's wrong with you, well, that's their point of view.
Right,
making
well,
the value
and now I understand why, you know.
Right. Well, then you see the value of taking the test. In her case, it helped her understand why she reacted and why the siblings made their judgments over her. And this also, as I said before, in the marital situation is very, very helpful. Because before you run to the divorce lawyer, take the Myers-Briggs, okay? And as I say, many marriage counselors, I wasn't exactly a marriage counselor, but I did have clients who came to me with these problems that were becoming great rifts, and they were saying, I just don't understand, making value judgments about it. He's always so practical. She's always over the mountain, so to speak. So understanding where the other person is coming from, and not making a value judgment, but recognizing that we all have different gifts, different functions, strengths, and recognizing what your strength is can make for greater harmony in almost every situation. Yes? Did you have a question yet? Oh, you were looking so. Well, tomorrow, if anybody wants to talk about dreams, I have a sign-up sheet here, and I have here some bibliographies that you can pick up on readings, Jung, various levels, different books that are helpful. Unfortunately, the bookstore is sold out of this book that I use, that is basically the text, and that's Dreams, A Way to Listen to God by Morton Kelsey. Morton Kelsey has also written the book, The Other Side of Silence, which I think we still have in the bookstore, and it's a way to meditate. And he's a Christian, he's an Episcopalian priest, and a Jungian analyst. A wonderful combination. He will be speaking in Minneapolis in October to the Jung Association, incidentally. And Minneapolis, we have a active Jung Association in which we have lectures every month and small group studies for those of you who come from Minneapolis. Yes?
Could you comment on persons who say they don't remember their dreams? Is that true that they're doing, I mean, can you make something of that, or is it just a matter of developing that skill? Or?
Well, I have spoken about this, but I'll say it again. Because we dream 4 and 5 times every night, the not remembering of the dream is simply that you're not wanting to pay attention, not disciplining yourself when you first wake up to let the images rise. And some people just are not needing to remember. The big dreams will come to you unbidden, but the ordinary dreams can fly away very quickly if you move right out of your bed to what you have to do during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So the method to remember your dreams is to allow enough time and to want to remember them so that you lean back, keep your eyes closed, and let the dream images rise. You'll be surprised. But you have to want to remember them.
It doesn't always work, though.
No?
No, some time ago I had a very interesting dream, and I remembered it right after I woke up, and I thought, I've got to remember that because I want to tell somebody about it. And then it disappeared. Now, why is that then?
Well, he maybe needed to write it down quickly. It is very ephemeral. It just, you know, because it's of a different nature, it does move away quickly. It's important to write it down. If you remember it, but then you know, at our age, sometimes we can't remember why we went into the kitchen to get something. So
that's not just at our age. People younger than that do that too.
All right. Well, thank you all. I think it is time to think about getting ready for supper. And there is a tape. You can listen to the tape. And there's tapes from last week on how to remember dreams, introduction to dreams, and so forth. Tomorrow, I think I'll talk about dream interpretation. Thank you all.